Welcome back. It's your favorite dog trainer, Liz Foley, here with my trusty co-host, Jeff Gadway. And you're listening to Honest to Dog Podcast.
Roll that intro.
Make sure you're not just looking at the paint job. Make sure you understand the training that's required for that breed, grooming expectations, exercise expectations, health and temperament. There's so much information out there. So don't do an impulse buy with a dog because it looks cute. Do your homework.
So what'd you think of that new intro, Liz?
I liked it, but I want to know more so from our audience if they liked it.
What do you think? Drop into our DMs. Let us know if you like that new way of kind of introing the episode. We just wanted to kind of switch things up and freshen things up. It's, you know, signs of spring are coming. So we thought we would try something new.
And this is our 36th episode?
36th episode. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. That's pretty incredible.
I know. Way to go us.
Way to go us. And way to go all of you for sticking with us and listening. We really appreciate all the good comments and all the listens. It means the world to us.
We are really building that village.
Absolutely. So what are we talking about today, Liz?
Today we're going to focus on breeds.
Breeds. Interesting. What led you to this topic? Like, why do you think breeds is an important thing to talk about?
I think because there are misunderstandings around certain breeds. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes people focus too much on breed. So just unpacking that, what I look at when I'm working at it with a dog or with a client, when somebody comes to me and they want to get a dog, how do we kind of navigate that? The whole discussion about what would be a good fit for them and their family, breed often comes up.
So you mentioned we maybe focus a little bit too much on breeds. So when you think about all of the things that go into having a well-trained dog, a well-balanced dog, how much of a role does breed actually play at the end of the day when it comes to that outcome?
So when I'm working with clients and their pets, I don't obsess and focus on breed first and foremost. First, we have to understand that all dogs are animals and animals have a certain amount of needs that they need addressed. So let's start there. Then we have to look at species, which is dog, and what they need. And then we can dive into breed and what needs they have within that umbrella.
So it's kind of like a hierarchy of different needs. First, recognizing the being as an animal, and then, you know, within that, you know, animal classification, it's dog as the type of animal, and then it's breed, and then name.
Mm-hmm. And when people come to me, they usually talk about, how do we relate to our animals? Name first. This is Baker. He's a Chihuahua. That's how we describe our own dogs.
Right.
But so, like, let's look at that. If you look at animal, they have very simple needs, right? Just like humans, safety, shelter, food, and water. Animals live in the moment. They're instinctual. That's our understanding of animals.
Okay.
Then we look at species dog. They are pack animals. So they need a balanced pack. And then they also need exercise, discipline, and then affection in that order. That's where I have to start because, yeah, everybody's probably already providing shelter, food, and water and safety for the dog, I should hope, right? But already in tier two, we're not fulfilling a dog's actual needs. So that's where we have to start. And then we can look at the breed specifics.
Oh, that makes so much sense. So when people are coming with problems that they're attributing to the breed, they're maybe overlooking those fundamentals of species, which is dog or canine, and the needs for exercise, discipline, affection. And if they were to address those things first, those things that they're writing off as sort of breed specific or even personality specific would probably take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm. So like, think about Chihuahuas. They're known as being yappy dogs. So people meet Baker and they go, he's a Chihuahua, but he hardly barks. Well, yeah, because he gets enough exercise, discipline, affection. It's not actually really in the breed in and of itself.
When people come to you and ask a question like, I want to adopt a dog, what breed should I get? How do you think about a question like that? Because, you know, so long as they are first and foremost respecting the dog as species dog and meeting, you know, ready to fulfill those needs for exercise, discipline, and affection, then where does breed start to factor into that decision-making process?
So size of dog compared to like your living environment, grooming expectations, like are you willing to have a high maintenance breed who needs regular grooms? And you have to factor that into the budget. Shedding if anyone's allergic in the home, but also based on kind of your own lifestyle. Are you a super active person? Are you more relaxed? Do you like time outdoors? If you have a husky, I sure hope you like doing long hikes and being outdoors more than indoors, because that's definitely a dog that wants to go on adventures. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. The other thing I'm thinking about too is, you know, you said that at the species level, you know, dogs are pack animals and they have needs for a balanced pack. They experience the world through their senses. They're looking for exercise, discipline, affection. When you get into kind of the breed level, would it be fair to say that the needs of different breeds vary based on kind of the characteristics that they're best suited for?
When we look at breed and name, those are human constructs. So humans created all the different breeds that we see today to perform different tasks and jobs.
Right.
So there are certain breeds, and I think it's really important that we dive into each breed category and talk about what they were instinctually bred as jobs to do so that you can better understand and then select a dog that fits your lifestyle.
Right.
Because I'm going to say there are some breeds that I would say, you know what, maybe that's not a great family pet. We can talk about why.
And what's, I think, really important, just to kind of lift up what you're saying there, the way that you approached that was picking a breed based on lifestyle and those characteristics of the breed and their needs, not based on aesthetics.
Yes.
Right?
So that's the thing. The coat and color of a dog isn't like picking a car color. It comes with what that dog is instinctually bred to do.
Right.
Right. So it's not just makeup.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you tell me, but I get the sense in talking to a lot of new dog owners, especially, you know, with all the people that are getting puppies right now, people go into that situation of choosing a dog based on, well, I want a dog that's like, you know, cute or small or this kind of a coat or these kind of physical attributes, and they don't think as much about, okay, what are the needs this particular breed is going to have, and is my lifestyle suited to fulfilling those needs mm-hmm. effectively? So let's dive into talking about, you know, some of the most common groups of breeds. And I know we were looking at this beforehand. The American Kennel Club recognizes 7 groups of breeds. So we're going to focus on that because it is generally accepted, you know, in the professional realm. So let's just start working through the list. Maybe starting with like terriers, for example. What are some of the key attributes of the terrier group?
So terriers are known to be feisty, short-legged. They are bred to actually go underground in pursuit of rodents. So they are hunters. So a lot of the time, a common trait within terriers is they might dig.
Ah, interesting.
And so if you're not fulfilling your dog in other ways, that could become a problem behavior, maybe in your home, in your backyard, your dog's digging up your backyard. Terriers can also be known to be really yappy and barky if they're not fulfilled. So say we're talking about a Westie. West Highland Terrier is an example of a terrier, popular breed, highly intelligent. So you're definitely going to want to make sure that you're exercising that dog and fulfilling it socially.
Right. And is there a specific kind of family that might be best suited for a dog in that terrier group?
I would say probably older children and people who can be active and really engaged in the training aspect for a dog. Because if you're getting a terrier, you're not getting a couch potato dog. You're not. If that's your intention, you're going to have a very obnoxious, loud, jumpy, barky nuisance of a dog.
That makes sense.
If that's fair to say. So you want, I would say, kids older than like 8 in the home and a very like active, someone who's going to walk the dog regularly.
Yeah. What about the toy group? What are some kind of common characteristics of dogs that fit into that group? And what type of a household environment might be best suited to a toy dog?
So toy is definitely the group of people who want a companion pet, who want probably a small dog. They're all actually pretty small, but they kind of vary in their coat types, colors, and sizes. But they're typically small enough to fit on your lap. And that's because toy dogs were bred to literally be just your right-hand man, your little buddy that goes with you everywhere. And so those are your Chihuahuas, your Pugs, your Shih Tzus. They don't have a specific job other than to provide comfort and friendship. So that is a good pet for maybe someone who's older, maybe someone who lives in a condo and has a small space. But this is definitely a breed I wouldn't have around small children, because any kids under maybe 10 years old, because they really need to be sensitive to that dog maybe not wanting to be picked up all the time or touched or poked. So I find little dogs not to be as trusting around little humans.
Right. And I think it's really important to just reemphasize that regardless of what group of breed we're talking about, they all still have those fundamental needs for exercise, yes, discipline, affection. And so even a toy dog, even though it's kind of stereotyped in film and television, you know, these are the dogs that go in a purse or go in a handbag. I'm thinking Elle Woods, right?
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that and expect that dog to be well-behaved, right? Yeah. It still needs that structure, that routine, that discipline. Go back and listen to the one about discipline if you haven't. Those are all still really important, regardless of what group we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. They just don't need above and beyond, like say some of our working and sporting breed dogs.
Good segue. So talk about kind of working and sporting and what those groups kind of maybe share in terms of characteristics or how they're similar or different.
Mm-hmm. So working breed dogs have been bred to perform certain jobs. So those jobs vary from pulling sleds to guarding flocks, homes, or families. So they're kind of known for being a little bit standoffish if it's a protection dog. So say a Rottweiler. And then you have Huskies who are very strong, who are meant and used to pulling something.
It's interesting because I feel like, you know, a lot of times you have training clients who come to you with a working breed dog experiencing some issues, experiencing some behavioral challenges. And oftentimes I think one of the first questions you ask is, well, what job have you given this dog, right? Because this is a breed that needs a job. It needs something to do, right? To fulfill its purpose. And so, you know, sometimes you will recommend that that dog carry on a backpack or, you know, do something to fulfill that instinctual desire or instinctual need.
Mm-hmm. And touching on that too, like if you put a harness on a Husky, it is going to want to pull. So don't use a harness on a Husky.
Right, because you're going to trigger that instinctual drive.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What about sporting? What are some examples of sporting and some things that make them unique?
Sporting breed dogs are very, very popular. So you know them as retrievers, like Labrador retrievers, Golden retrievers. They're bred to assist hunters in catching or retrieving feathered game. So labs, everybody knows labs and golden retrievers love to swim. If you're expecting to have a really clean house and like nice things and you don't want a wet, smelly dog, don't get one of those dogs, because anytime those dogs are around water, that kicks in. They're going to want to. So an ideal pet for, say, a family who wants to go camping every weekend in the summer or cottaging, that's a great dog to have in that environment.
While we're on the topic of retrievers, I feel like there is, you know, a very common stereotype around golden retrievers that they make great family pets, probably because they look cuddly and cute. And
like Air Bud and all the movies that they've been in.
So based on what you just shared around that sporting group, how would you encourage people to rethink that stereotype around kind of family suitability, especially with Goldens?
Yeah, no breed comes pre-trained, right? Yes, they can make great family pets. We know a bunch of Golden Retrievers. They have great temperaments, but I've also met aggressive Golden Retrievers. It's not like that trait can't exist within them. No, any dog who isn't fulfilled or trained can be aggressive. So just getting a Golden Retriever and thinking your life is going to be a fairy tale isn't truth. They do need training.
And are there any you know, tips or tricks you can offer for families of sporting breed dogs to kind of appease their instinctual drive, you know, whether it's, you know, maybe scent work or something like that, that will give them that sense of fulfillment, you know, since we're not all out there hunting ducks every weekend.
Yeah. Playing fetch and making it structured would definitely fulfill that dog. Having kind of structured games and like even fetch in the water, that would make a golden retriever Labrador so happy. That's a love language for that dog. So you should 100% participate in that in some way, shape or form. Another example too of a sporting breed we didn't talk about. Sporting breeds aren't just retrievers. They also include pointers and setters. And so their role with hunters, instead of going and capturing and retrieving what's been shot, is actually to point in the direction of where they should be focusing and where the animal is. And then that kind of segues to the next group, which is the hounds.
So release the hounds.
Hounds are helpful with hunters, and there's two categories of hound dogs.
Okay.
So there's sight hound and then there's scent hound. So an example of a sight hound dog would be a greyhound.
Okay.
So they're very visual
and
they're built for speed because they need to be able to visibly track their prey. And so that's why if you watch like actual dog races, they're chasing something that's really tiny on a track that's just going wicked fast. They're very sleek in nature, they're long-legged, and they're built for explosive speed.
Kind of like me.
Yes.
Not at all like me.
And then...
I'm more of a scent hound, probably.
And then our scent hounds, they have a powerful nose. And so instead of being built for speed, they're built for endurance. So they tend to be like a beagle, compact, sporty.
Right, right.
Very athletic.
Also like me.
Yes. So if you have a scent hound, you might want to use like a halter or a transitional lead to bring that nose up off the ground and be prepared for really long walks. And then as a way to segue, you could do scent work. That would be a super fulfilling thing to do for a dog.
Right, right.
We would do off leash with Carmen and literally just let her explore because Carmen was part beagle.
Right. I was going to bring that up and ask just, you actually to once we talk about these seven groups, put our dogs into the groups. But yeah, Carmen, she would like live with her nose on the ground and just zigzag. We'd be walking and she'd zigzag along a path from one side to the other, just following her nose. And she was so happy doing that. Yeah.
So like even on a structured walk, giving your dog time to like, here's the full leash, go have sniffs and just enjoy yourself. There's a little bit of freedom there. But you want to put limitations on that.
We've covered five of the seven. We've got two left. We should talk about herding. What are some herding dog breeds? And this is one, you know, I'd love for you to dig into this a little bit because I feel like at the doghouse, you have a number of herders, and especially, you know, in environments like a daycare or a dog park, that can be a challenging environment for herders because of those natural instincts. And so maybe giving owners of herding dogs some tips on how to harness, control, fulfill those needs.
So herding dogs are like your border collie, German shepherd, corgi. So they're meant to move livestock. So like say sheep, right? So they want to control things and keep things together. They are very intelligent, highly responsive, do really well with high levels of training too because of that drive to do work. A lot of the time, if I work with any of these breeds, one of the first things I'm recommending is we're putting a backpack on this dog on walks to give it some sort of sense of more purpose than just a walk. That dog is going to get bored easily because it needs to be challenged. And when I say challenged and like mental stimulation, I'm not talking about like puzzles on the floor for your dog. Like a lot of people think that that's just a cure-all. When a lot of the time that's very arousing for a dog, that gets them more exciting. So in a short term, it might tire your dog, but long term, it's probably going to make them smarter, more energetic, more pushy.
It's like endurance training them. Yeah. Like you've said before, if all you do is run your dog, you're training a sprinter, right? So it's the same kind of thing with, you know, those kind of floor games.
Or you could be creating OCD.
Ah.
Right? Where like, I'm just thinking like obsessive compulsive, like Rubik's Cubers. Or
fidget spinners.
Yeah, right? Like, and like, oh, the worst ever is when people play with laser pointers on the ground with their dog. I've seen it happen where a dog becomes obsessive with chasing anything that reflects on the floor to then it being shadows, and they...
It's a gateway drug.
It's very dangerous. They become very obsessive, fixated, and there's nothing you can really do to get it out of them.
So when you talk about something like a backpack to provide some mental challenge, what is it about the backpack? Or I've also heard you talk about like maybe getting your dog to wear one boot, mm-hmm. or like some things like that. Like, what is it about that kind of a training strategy that appeases that mental stimulation need?
It's something other to focus on. So a lot of the time, if you take a dog on a walk who has high drive to perform, if you're just like, no, all you're doing on this walk is following me, the dog's like, are you sure you don't want me to also protect? You want me to be on alert? Like, they just kind of, and they can't focus. I'm thinking of a dog that we dog sat, Cleveland, who is a sheepdog, and he really struggled to remain focused on walks. And so I started using a backpack on him, and it made such a difference. And so instead of struggling against something, why not be creative and find more of a solution so that you can fulfill the dog and not frustrate yourself?
That's such a really important point. And I'm glad you went there, because as we talk about all these different criterias of these different breeds, it's kind of like, and you already made this reference once, so I just want to kind of elevate it and focus on it. It's like understanding your dog's love language, right? Or understanding mm-hmm. your partner's love language. If you know what it is, you can work with it and respect it and honor it, as opposed to working against nature. So mm-hmm. what you just said there about, like, you know, working with whatever your dog's got going, as opposed to working against it, it's just mm-hmm. going to make everybody's life a lot easier and more enjoyable. And you're going to see a much more fulfilled dog as a result if you're on the same wavelength.
Absolutely. And like, suppression only works to a certain point. Like, if you're trying to suppress, it's going to lead to an explosion at some point. And so if you have a border collie or German shepherd or a corgi, and they seem to have this high drive, you don't have to take them to a field where there are sheep to fulfill them. You don't have to do that one thing. A lot of border collies do agility because there's a mental component to it, and they're learning, they get to be creative, they get to solve problems, and that fulfills that role for them. A lot of the time, herding dogs tend to want to chase vehicles and end up getting hit. So that desire to control movement, you also see it a lot with children, where they nip at children. And so not a breed I would recommend if you have a very kind of kid-friendly home, where even if you don't have a lot of kids yourself, kids that are moving and active and playing are going to create some level of stress for that dog, where that dog's going to go, I have a job. Do you want me to go in? I'm going to go in. Put me in, coach. Like, I'm ready to go. You definitely want to train the heck out of that dog and supplement that drive in some other way.
So the last group is one that I've always felt a little sorry for, because it feels like kind of a catch-all group.
It is. That's my note.
Non-sporting. Right here. So what are non-sporting breeds? And, you know, considering that it is a little bit of a miscellaneous group, are there any kind of characteristics about those breeds, or any misconceptions or misnomers about those breeds that we need to be aware of?
So non-sporting breeds, all the dogs that fall under that category, and like, this is actually what it says on the American Kennel Club, is that all they have in common with each other is that they have four paws and a wet nose. So it is. It's absolutely a catch-all category.
The forgotten canines.
Yeah. They don't have anything really in common with each other. They have varying sizes, varying coats, varying personalities and appearances, and they weren't really bred for a specific role. And it doesn't say this anywhere, but this is my kind of then understanding of it, is I really just think these dogs were bred just then for their appearance.
One of the misconceptions, I think, around some of the dogs in the non-sporting group, dogs like bulldogs, is that they're couch potatoes, that they're lazy. What's been your experience with dogs that fall into that category?
That myth is absolutely false. That a lot of bulldogs, Dalmatians, Frenchies that I know, they're busy. They're busy bodies. They aren't super chill until they mature and are much older, but they still, again, like all these dogs, and no matter what category they are, they still have the fundamental needs of dog, and they still need exercise, discipline, and then affection.
Right.
So if you have a toy or a non-sporting dog, it doesn't mean you can't not walk them and you can just love on them all the time, because they weren't really bred for a specific job. No, that's not true. They still need their fundamental needs met.
Hey, Honest to Dog listeners. Really exciting news. If you want to put all the great stuff you're learning through Honest to Dog podcast into action, Liz is opening up her Quintessential Training Essentials online course. It starts on March the 10th. It's a 5-week hybrid program with online self-directed learning coupled with group training and personalized feedback from Liz herself. It's a great way to apply all the great tools of dog behavior training and use it to strengthen the relationship with your dog. There's only a few spots left. So if you're interested or you want to learn more, go to doghouse.ca for all the details and to claim your spot. To make it real easy, we've put a link to the course in the description for this episode. So go check it out.
Now back to the show.
So I think a lot of what we've talked about with these 7 different groups, really important information for people considering going out and getting a dog and making sure that they find the appropriate match between their lifestyle, their home environment, their circumstances, and the needs of that group. For folks who already have a dog, what advice do you have for ensuring that those intrinsic needs are met?
So I would look at where the problem is showing up, right? So let's say it's a retriever in the home who every time you come home from work brings you your slippers, and you're like, no, not my favorite slippers. I've worked with family pets and we've trained the dog to carry something else, right? So bring me your stuffy or something that they can have and reward that. Carrying a stick on a walk is also a great thing for a retriever to do. Sometimes that's just, they're like, thank you, I needed that. Like, their tail goes up, they enjoy their walk that much more. Say it's a mastiff who's barking at the door, acknowledging that that's kind of part of the trait of that dog is to be a protector of the family home. So just put limitations on that, allow it to practice that role, but then socialize it very, very well so that it doesn't become an aggressive dog. There are going to be dogs who have tendencies to do certain things. And so you have the choice to actively let them practice that or supplement it with something else.
Yeah.
So if you have a dog and you don't want them to practice certain behaviors, say it's a German Shepherd and you don't want it hurting dogs at the dog park, then you should be socializing that dog very, very young with other dogs and not practicing that behavior and then fulfilling them in a different way.
Another example I think of from earlier, when you talked about like herding dogs, like an Australian Shepherd or something, if you're not in a position to put it in an environment where it can herd other livestock, finding something that still appeases that drive, like agility or something
dog
of that
diving
nature. Yeah, that will
fly
still
frisbee,
tick that box for it.
Yeah.
Because what happens if, you know, whether it's a herding dog or a working dog or a sporting dog, if those needs that are intrinsic to the breed are not met, how will they respond? Like,
they're going to find a different way to exercise that, right? And you're not going to like it.
Right.
It's going to look way worse than if you control it and set parameters around it.
For people who are thinking, oh, my dog is doing X, like, you know, and then insert annoying behavior or destructive behavior, I think a good question to ask yourself is, which group of breeds does it fall into? And are we fulfilling that need? And also, are we fulfilling the basic formula for a balanced dog?
Right? Yeah, I mean, that's where I start.
That's step one. But also what you just talked about, you know, through this episode, understanding what those love languages are for your dog and making sure that you're connecting with it.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to point out that you can have a chill husky, right? There are exceptions to the rule. I'm not saying every German Shepherd needs a job, but I also have met German Shepherds from working line breeders that are very problematic as companion pets because they were actually tailored to be worked. So there are breeders out there who are creating German Shepherds for police work and German Shepherds for companion pets. Know what you're intending to have that dog for and find somebody who can give you that temperament, because the last thing you want is a type A personality dog in your home just chomping at the bit to go, 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 go. understand what you're kind of getting yourself into. And if it's been a dream of yours forever and always to have a certain breed, make sure you're not just looking at the paint job. Make sure you understand the training that's required for that breed. There are a lot of websites with pretty decent information about the American Kennel Club is one of them, with trainability for that dog, grooming expectations, exercise expectations, health and temperament. There's so much information out there. So get into it. Don't do an impulse buy with a dog because it looks cute. Do your homework.
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Stu, who recently adopted a dog. And I got to say, you know, here's a guy who exercised patience, exercised a lot of self-awareness. You know, he reached out over Instagram and said, look, I'm looking for a dog. You know, here's my lifestyle. Here's what I'm able to offer it. Here are the characteristics I want. And he went out and adopted a dog, not based on looks or aesthetics or anything like that. It was, let me find a breed and a dog that is going to match what I'm able to offer and my lifestyle. And he found a great dog, a beautiful dog. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way it should be, right? Like, you know, find the dog that's going to be your soulmate.
Yeah, there needs to be like an eHarmony for dogs.
Yeah, the exact breed, you know, once you're within that group is kind of irrelevant.
Yeah,
a little bit. Like, I know that sounds really, really whatever, but like, you know, like when we adopted our dogs, we weren't looking for, we need to tick the Chihuahua box and we need to tick the Jindo box and we need to tick the Heinz 57 Mexican street dog, three-legged box.
Yeah.
You know, we found dogs that had the right energy, the right temperament.
The soul connection was there. That's the most important to me.
And the breed was a bonus.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Breed was a bonus. I like that. But no, that's what I wish more people would focus on. And that's actually kind of why I love going the route of adopting adult dogs. And we talked about this in the one about rescues, is that an older dog, you can kind of see their personality and really who they are. And then you can see if you click, you can like go for a walk, go on a first date and see how it feels. Because when we took Baker on a walk, that's when we knew. We're like, oh, this little sweetie's just like, he clicks. He followed on the walks. He made good eye contact. He was a good little listener. And we knew he was submissive, so he'd fall into our pack just so. It wasn't like, oh, well, he's a small dog and we haven't had a small dog yet and he'll fit in my purse and that's the perfect thing. That wasn't part of it at all. It's never been about with any of our dogs, the size, the breed, the coat color. It's all about energy and feel. And that you can get in any breed.
Yeah. And for those people who have a very specific type of dog, I was listening to a podcast the other day where the host was like, I'm getting a this and I grew up with this and I want this, and you know, I think that's perfectly fine. People are entitled to that.
Absolutely.
You just need to know what you're getting into and, you know, be able to honor that dog and that commitment to working with the instinctual things that might come along with that breed. And if you're comfortable with that and you know what you're signing up for, you've done your research and you are confident you're going to be able to fulfill that, then all the power to you. Go for it.
Just make informed decisions. Make good choices. So that's going to be our new tagline.
Perfect.
Honest to dog. Make good choices. Here to help you make good choices. Well, I hope this did justice by all our different dog breeds. There's so many different dog breeds, but this was our easiest way to tackle this, was just a few examples of each category. So I hope we helped our listeners have a better understanding of each dog.
Well, it worked for me. I learned a lot I didn't know coming into this. So thanks for sharing, Liz. I really appreciate it. And thanks to all of you for listening, tuning in week after week. We really appreciate your support. If you have any questions or feedback, drop into our DMs on Instagram.
And until next time, stay calm and assertive.
If you like what you heard, hit that subscribe button and leave us a comment or a review. We'd love to hear from you.
We release a new podcast weekly. Follow us on Instagram at Honest to Dog Podcast.
Honest to Dog Podcast is hosted by Liz Foley and Jeff Gadway. The show is engineered, edited, and produced by me, Timothy Musa. Support for the podcast is provided by The Doghouse. For all things training and daycare, head over to their website, doghaus.ca.